You are listening to a sermon by Paul Thiessen, recorded on Sunday, March 9th, 2025, at Poinker Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimriff.org.
So I must say I was a bit overwhelmed when I walked into the sanctuary this morning. My goodness, I'm just so grateful for the hands that painted that and mounted it. It's profound. Who needs a rose window? That's just amazing. So I'm reminded today of why we live in such a green place. And I remember my astonishment when grade three, my parents and I, and my siblings, journeyed to BC for the first time because I had an uncle who lived in Black Creek. And my astonishment at the greenery, I just could hardly believe it. When you're living in Southern Alberta in fall, it's you're reminded of why it's so green. So my inspiration for this reflection came from recently reading the book God's Ghostwriters, Enslaved Christians and the Making of the Bible by Candida Moss. It's a 2024 publication book. And this book led me to ponder some of the literary journey that ended in the writing of the Bible as we know it today. In particular, I'd like to reflect on the important but hidden role played by slaves in writing and transcribing. What has been said and recorded about the past obviously has significant implications for the present, but writing a history of enslaved literate workers is very difficult. This is in part due to the fact that the fragmentary glimpses of the lives of slaves is usually channeled through the enslavers. There was no real consciousness of the slave having the right to be recognized independently, as they were simply a useful appendage of their owners. So the original voices of those who actually recorded the New Testament scriptures are mostly unknown to us. As you will see, this has profound implications, ramifications for the Bible that has come down to us. For some four decades after the death of Jesus, Paul, with the original disciples and their unnamed helpers, toured the Mediterranean spreading the news about Jesus. Our only reliable literary evidence of their activities are the letters of Paul, as other canonical texts describing Jesus and the apostles stem from the last quarter of the first century. In the intervening period, a catastrophic series of events radically shaped how the followers of Jesus thought and wrote about their place in history. In the year 70 CE, Jerusalem fell to the Romans under Titus after an 8-month siege. Certainly, Paul had considerable trepidation in approaching the task of evangelizing the folks in Rome. There were already Jesus followers there, but Paul would only have been known to them, Paul began by sending a letter, the book of Romans, that would introduce him to the Roman congregations in advance of his visit. He begins in Romans 1:8 by thanking God for all of them and acknowledging that their faith was being widely reported all over the world. No scholars have really doubted that Paul is the author of Romans. However, tucked into the last section of the final chapter, which is chapter 16 of Romans, is this noteworthy verse 22. I, Tertius, wrote down this letter, greet you in the Lord. So who is Tertius? Most artistic depictions of Paul, including the carefully laid ancient mosaics in Ravenna, Italy, show Paul working alone with a quill in his hand. Yet here we have direct reference to another writer. The minimalist opinion on the subject is that Tertius was Paul's secretary, or amanuensis in Latin. We can imagine that as Paul paced the room, fervently pausing to find the right word or phrase, Tertius was dutifully recording every syllable. Now, some of you in the room have worked through translators, and one of the things I went to the Ukraine many times in the 1990s on a pediatric health project, and of course, all my communication was done through translators. And I noticed very early on that different translators had very different styles. Some would listen to a whole thought and translate it. Some would do it phrase by phrase. So there are definitely different ways of translating. Now, that's oral translation. We're looking at here is written translation. But there are definitely different styles of translating. It is estimated that only about 10% of the population of ancient Rome was literate. And Tertius was one of the thousands of erudite but enslaved people who acted as stenographers, transcribing ideas and editing the output. He is variously described as a scribe, professional, or associate. The people who worked as ancient secretaries, scribes, were not usually part of an ambitious or educated middle class. With a single name like Tertius, which simply means third, he was almost certainly a slave. And while he's one of the few enslaved followers of Jesus whose name is preserved in the New Testament, Tertius is not the only set of enslaved hands to have played a formative role in forming the Christian scriptures. While the authorship of the New Testament has been credited to a select group of men, the fact is that the individuals behind those names did not write alone. In fact, they may not have written at all. Hidden behind those names are enslaved co-authors and collaborators, almost all of whom are uncredited. The fact that they are not well known is no accident, for in the ancient world, enslaved literary workers' legal status ensured invisibility. According to the twisted logic of slavery, they were mere extensions of the more powerful of their owners, from whom they were rented or borrowed. Their ideas and labors belonged to their enslavers, who were not obliged to credit them. That same philosophy, of course, then spread to Atlantic slavery many years, much farther along in history, that you were really not credited for your own ideas. Some of these collaborators may have been baptized Christ followers themselves, although we have no way to determine if that was voluntary. In Acts, we read that whole households were converted by the apostles at once, Acts 2:41 and 10:47 and 48. These households would have included enslaved people whose beliefs and feelings were unlikely to be considered, much less credited. If the male head of the household, the paterfamilias, was converted to Christianity, then the whole household, including slaves, would be baptized. Choice and consent is problematic when applied to enslaved people who lacked bodily autonomy and really could not refuse their enslavers anything, including whether to participate in sexual or religious practices. We do not know whether enslaved peoples participated in religious practices, but we do know that they were viewed as Christians if their owners were Christians. However, enslaved Christians were still enslaved, so the concept of brothers and sisters in the Lord, as expressed by Paul of Tertius, is a problematic one. This raises the question of how much input these slaves had in the transmission of the Gospels. Some readers may be tempted to remove Tertius or other scribes from contention for authorship, although altogether, and to dismiss them as mere conduits for the words of others. They were just writing down what they heard. However, if we examine closely the work of enslaved writers in the Roman world, we can see that they were sometimes co-authors in their own right and not merely scribes. In particular, they were responsible for structuring documents and selecting the correct vocabulary and creating the right mood and or intent. And we have all heard of international incidents where translators translated differently from what the person intended who is speaking, and that can be very problematic and also very difficult to detect at times. For any of you who have communicated through interpreters or translators, you'll be aware of the wide-ranging power they have in word selection and sentence structure that you, as the person doing the speaking or dictating, may be completely unaware of, which can then play a very important role in how the intended message is delivered. I have considerable experience using translators in my medical trips in Ukraine and Central America and South America. I had much less need to use them in Uganda or India, where English is the lingua franca. It can be quite baffling when someone says a whole sentence and the translator responds with a yes or no. Like sometimes you'd listen and you go, really? Is that all they were saying? It is generally acknowledged that these low-status literary workers or scribes made an enormous but mostly unheralded contribution to the writing and formation of the New Testament and the spread of early Christianity. They wrote, carried, read, and interpreted sacred texts for the early church. Christian proclamation was not just the work of a dozen hand-picked freeborn disciples, but owes much to the enslaved and often unusually invisible workers whose names have mostly been erased and whose status has been obscured. How much is owed to these literary helpers is difficult, if not impossible, to determine with any accuracy, but it was certainly not a trivial contribution. Let me point out one example. In 1 Corinthians 14, 33-55, we read, quote, "As in all the congregations of the saints, women should remain silent in the church. They are not allowed to speak, but must be in submission, as the law says. If they want to inquire about anything, they should ask their own husbands at home, for it is disgraceful for a woman to speak in church," end quote. Much church policy has been based on these verses, and yet it is problematic in that it appears in different locations in surviving manuscripts as though it was originally just a margin note that was added later. It is intrusive. It interrupts what the chapter is talking about, and when it is removed, the passage again flows around one theme. It also contradicts what Paul has just said about women prophesying with their heads uncovered. It is therefore here where we begin to understand the role, powerful role that writers played in the Bible as it has come to us, allowing not only mistakes but willful editing to play its part. We now know of over 5,000 Greek copies of the New Testament, ranging from fragments to 27 books and dating from the 2nd century to the invention of the printing press in the 15th century. Of these, no two copies, except for the smallest fragments, agree in all their wording. Here again, the impact of various writers is in evidence. Historians frequently state that Rome's reliance on enslaved laborers acquired by military expansion propelled its economy and society forward, which was true in general of the ancient world. When we were visiting Egypt about 8 years ago, we were in awe of the enormous stone temples in Luxor in the Valley of the Kings, which were, of course, constructed by slaves. However, it should be acknowledged that rather than receiving credit, enslaved workers and the fact that they were enslaved have mostly been obscured. Enslaved people and the key roles they play are as central to the history of ideas and recorded history as they are to the history of physical labor. Enslaved workers richly deserve recognition, acknowledgement, and should not be relegated to the footnotes of intellectual and religious history. However, aside from the rare scribe like Tertius, their names and identities have mostly been obscured or lost. Aside from questions raised as to the actual transmission of the Bible, are there other questions this raises for our times? Concerning the issue of while slavery is not a concept we really feel the need to address in our country and in this era, I think we should ponder how we can recognize and affirm the efforts and contributions of those whose efforts are marginalized or overlooked. This requires an attitude of compassionate alertness to ensure that the work of others is acknowledged, attributed, and praised, and that no one is marginalized or ignored. It's obviously hard to ignore this. This requires a state of vigilance coupled with a true desire to ensure that no one and their contributions are ignored. Let's ensure that as much as lies within our power, we ensure that no one's contributions are ignored or overlooked. Amen.